Caroline Johnson, I really, if we had 5 hours, we'd go into your life and your background, which is the way we normally do these podcasts. But because you are, and for anyone that doesn't know you, all about providing value, in the cafe just now, you kind of said to me, let's just get straight into it. So what I'm going to do is explain why I've invited you on this podcast and what my objectives are for today. I came across you after reading the book Madison Avenue Makeover. For anyone that hasn't read it, it's an incredible fly on the wall book where a chap, I believe from Bain Consulting, I think, goes into Huge, the digital transformation company, and essentially rips up everything that they had and goes on a huge journey, mind the pun, to evolve their business and evolve their services or products, not to give the book away. In that book, there was a lady that was mentioned called Caroline Johnson, who ran the company, the business model company, TMBC.
TMBC,
TMBC,
known
I'm
as
nearly
TBMC.
TBMC, thank you very much. And I was, this is the part that I paid a lot of attention to because a lot of the book at the beginning was about setting the right intentions and all of the problems, hence the name Madison Avenue Makeover, I think were applicable to all of my clients, anyone that is running an agency, anyone that is wondering, what do I do and how is this agency going to live for the next 20 years? And then when you entered the book, it felt like that was the first part of the book that became clear. I think you did a really good job in identifying the problem, and the person who wrote the book did a great job in explaining how you brought value to that business. So the purpose of this podcast and my objective, knowing that you are the business model person, particularly and specifically for the creative industry, which is important to say. And you know, you started your career at Grey and then moved into management consultancy. So you kind of gone from the, I don't know which side, the dark side to the light side, or which way that goes around. But you, I think it's important to say that because you have worked in a creative agency offering and now have since then spent over 2 decades in consulting. So my first question to you, very long introduction. Firstly, thank you for joining
Great
me today.
introduction. I just sit here and smile.
You're great, right, end the podcast. My objective here is to, as I said, there's, I always think there is a moat around consultancy, legal things, financial things. I'm not academically trained. I haven't got an MBA. And I think a lot of people that enter the creative industry are probably that way minded. I think it's quite archaic, but right and left brains. Oh, I'll be a you know, creatively minded part of the brain, therefore I'll go and start my own agency and work in the creative industry. And I think that's worked commercially. You know, consultancy companies then sell very well priced services to those creative companies and bam, 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 bam. I think that has changed. And yet, this incredible industry that offers so much value and has a history of providing so much value to huge brands and small brands and unheard of brands has caught, sort of become caught in the middle. And I think that's because of a lack of understanding of commerciality, what consultancies offer, perhaps some financial things in there as well. So my objective in this podcast is for you to help anyone that is running an agency in any domain, whether it's design, creative, content, influencer, and the list goes on. My objective is for them to be listening to this and to have a moment of clarity as to how they can evolve their business model offering, provide more value to their clients, and hopefully provide more value to themselves and the people that work for them. That's probably the longest introduction I've ever done. So, welcome. How did you get, why did you get into this, and why are you good at this?
Well, thank you for saying I'm good at it. I got into it because the creative industry is in my blood. It's always been in my blood. And it's an industry I love. I love the people. I love the innovation. I love the relationships that you make, the incredible friendships along the way. And as I was moving from management consulting into corporate advisory, I picked up on something that then became almost my life's work. And that was the skill and capability to repackage creative agencies into more relevant, more scalable, and more sustainable, and ultimately more creative business models.
Mm.
Now, when we started doing this, our purpose in corporate advisory was to allow what might have been a creative service agency to be able to transact and be valued at that transaction on a completely different range of multiples.
Okay.
And what that means is, as a creative service business, if you are going to transact, then the range of multiples that is applied to your EBITDA is between 6 and 9.
Okay, so just for the purpose of speaking to me like I'm a dumb caveman, when you say transact, you're saying an agency could potentially sell, do an MBO, do an EOT, whatever, some kind of
investment.
Take an investment.
Yes.
Offering growth in some elements.
Yes.
And when you say multiples and EBITDA, you're talking about the point at which, or the amount a company will be valued at, and the multiples, I'm sure you're going to get into range based on that. And EBITDA, profit, pretty much.
Profit.
Yeah.
Net profit.
Totally.
It's net profit.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we were really driving in the industry for a lot of independent businesses was to repackage them, bring in programs, bring in products, maybe bring in some platform, maybe bring in some licensing, but to be able to transition them and repackage them into a much more scalable, profitable, and relevant business model, which would allow them to be valued at a multiple that starts at 12 and goes up to about 18.
What would it normally be valued at if it was services alone?
Between 6 and 9. 9 is absolutely top.
Okay.
So using your creativity, and this is the important bit, because that change in valuations is a product of using your creative superpower, because it's actually about clever repackaging, clever creative storytelling, and understanding value in the hands of the buyer.
Yeah.
And that's a creative process. So it's more about moving from service to value, playing in a different game, and being able to learn a new language. And we call that the language of value. And that business model shift is a creative process.
I want to just go back to make this layman's terms and obvious. So let's say I run a company called Marchi & Marchi, and we sell advertising. It's 1980 and we're making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? Because that was doing very well, and Publicis would have acquired Marchi & Marchi for a lot of money.
Mm.
Why is that not possible anymore? And what has happened in the creative commercial landscape to mean that they have to evolve their model? Why can't they just carry on making ads and charging a good amount of money for that?
There are a lot of reasons for that. I think fundamentally what has happened is, as a creative industry, we have started to equate our value not to creativity, but to our effort and to our internal processes and our delivery models. So what has happened is we've developed a number of services or capabilities. Those services and capabilities are the same as everyone else's. That has allowed the industry to become commoditized.
Mm-hmm.
So there's very little differentiation when you actually look at what creative agencies are selling. Their superpower, the creativity, has almost become trapped in their effort. And that has allowed the industry and the creative business to come down the value chain and actually be a service industry doing do-for-me work, asking for do-for-me briefs, And it has the language of service, which is we do this and we do that, or we are this and we are that. That that service culture has also brought in sort of belief systems and behaviors, mm-hmm. which I call the Goodwill Service Agency, which is our primary motivation and driver in a service agency is to please our clients.
Mm.
And that the measure of a good client relationship is, does the client like us? Have we said yes enough? Have we never had to say no? Have we given things away for free? Have we given all our value away in a pitch? Are we over-servicing them in the sort of false mindset that if we over-please them and over-service them, they'll give us more work? And that mentality of give us a project, give us a brief, and then trying to scale from the point of services, which is cross-selling and upselling.
Yeah.
That service behavior, a service belief system, service culture. And the problem is that embedded sort of systemization around service has strangled creativity. Because if you think about it, it's not the creativity that is delivering value in the marketplace that we are talking about, or the value that clients can extract and realize from creativity that is the focus of ultimately what we're delivering. It's become a very internal focus of, you know, we do this, we do that, these are our processes and these are our services. And that service culture has meant that as an industry, we've become lower level, lower down the food chain, but also commoditized, because what we are selling is almost identical to everyone else.
And then it becomes either it's a talent battle, so our talent's better than theirs, an idea battle, which is in pitches, our idea's better than theirs, which a lot of them they will give away for free, right? They give their talent away for free in pitches, they'll give their ideas away. How does that stop happening? So actually, different question. Is there anything else that an agency can leverage other than their talent and their ideas if you're a creative agency? And where do you go from there?
Well, I think what's where we've got to in terms of how they are differentiating, they're trying to differentiate on what I can call the all-you-can-eat buffet.
Mm.
So the all-you-can-eat buffet is we actually got this idea and concept from the brand and advertiser community. This is how they describe what it feels like to engage with an agency.
Okay.
That they know they are going to be provided with an all-you-can-eat buffet. Where there really isn't much differentiation between sort of vintage champagne and a white piece of bread and butter. Yeah, it's all on the buffet. And I think the client mentality tends to be, we know we're going to feed ourselves extremely well on that buffet, for a year, and then we'll go and find another buffet which will be full of wonderful things. That is an issue, because we're not packaging up our value against different client challenges and different market challenges that clients have. Everything is just thrown onto the buffet and clients can feed themselves. So I think the first place to start is to challenge your own assumptions and belief systems and your own culture. Because if you have a embedded service culture, it's going to be extremely difficult to, for example, bring more commerciality, new commercial models, products, programs, to bring those to your service culture. Because the behaviors and the belief systems haven't changed.
You mentioned the triangle
yes.
of a business. I found yes. this really helpful for my mind. I think you always think of images a lot quicker. You mentioned every business has a triangle, right?
Yeah.
And I think that the thing that you explained, actually, you do the triangle because I don't want to ruin the triangle. Can you remember this?
I think it's quite, thanks for asking that, because it's quite a good place to start, which is, what is a business model?
Yeah.
We often think a business model is just charging more.
Yeah.
It's not. So if you think of a triangle, you've got at the top corner how you create value in the marketplace.
Mm.
And in a service culture, that create value point on the triangle is about selling services and talking about yourself a lot. Mm. So that's how you create value. Then you've got the second corner is how you deliver value.
Mm.
That is your operating system. And again, in a service culture, the operating system makes more money from going slower and being inefficient. Because the more people and the more hours you can justify in terms of effort, because you're charging time, the more money you make.
Yeah.
So the operating system is the opposite of what actually the market needs from you.
Yeah.
And then you've got how you capture value, which is the third one. And capture value is your commercial model. As an industry, we don't really have a commercial model, and we have no commercial principles, which I can talk about. But with no commercial model and no commercial principles, you might think, well, what have we got? We've got a costing model, which is costing up hours, effort, process, time, rates. We are equating our value to the time it takes to do something. So the three corners are how you create value, how you deliver value, and how you capture value. When you are looking at the opportunity to repackage your business, transition your business model, whatever changes you are looking at to stay relevant and thrive in the future market, which creative businesses should be able to thrive over the next decade.
Yeah.
There's no question there are so many opportunities ahead for the creative industry. But one thing I would say is, when you are making any changes in your business model, you cannot change one corner without changing the others.
Mm.
So changing your go-to-market story and not changing your operating system or your pricing model means you're just telling new stories. You're not actually achieving anything different. And changing your pricing model without changing your operating system doesn't work either, because your business runs on inefficiency.
Yeah.
So it's you haven't got an operating system that's aligned to a different pricing model anyway, because in a product and program model, you deliver that from a fixed cost base,
yeah,
and in a standardized way, and you take your margin off the table at the beginning.
Mm.
Your margin isn't left to chance, which it is in a sort of, it's, did we make any money after, we've given everything away and we hope we made some money. It's very different. So I think the ability to make really sustainable changes in all three corners is a really important place to start.
And that, in a weird way, sounds like a creative exercise. It's funny.
It's all creative.
I heard you say we should have more creativity in the boardroom, because at the moment we have our grandparents still in charge at the likes of WPP and IPG, who, and I've got a bit of a strange view on this, which is, what, they're not incentivized financially right now to evolve those systems, because they're probably waiting for a retirement thing to get paid out. So don't change anything until I'm out. Mm. And that won't really ever change, because someone's always going to be at the top that's like, can we just, before you do any big things? So the bigger networks, I can imagine, and the huge empathy for those companies, are probably not going to be the people to radically change this business model, because I think there's too much at risk. Can you give me an example of an agency? I mean, my example was Huge. I don't know if you're happy to do Huge, but an example of an agency where they were where every other agency was, and how by doing this, they are now not there.
Well, lot.
That is your business shop, yeah. But tell me, because I think I want to go from A to B, right? So, like, give me the pain of one of these companies you've worked with before. What were they struggling with? And then what journey did you go on, and where are they now?
That's a great question. I think what our clients have in common, which is a good place to start, because one of the questions is what separates success from failure?
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of perception that productizing creativity doesn't work.
Yeah.
And often it doesn't. And I can explain when it does work and when it doesn't. But I think if you look at all of our clients and the businesses we've worked with historically, they came at this from a position of strength, not fear.
Mm.
They felt they had extracted as much value as they could from their current model.
Okay.
It wasn't a sense of, if we don't do this, we are going to, we're not going to survive.
Mm.
It was much more of a sense of, we really believe in our creativity and our creative product, our innovation and our value.
Mm.
We have outgrown that current restricted, limited, commoditized service model.
Okay.
So the attitude and mindset was a positive one.
Interesting. It's belief, not fear.
Exactly. Okay. If you start it from absolute paralysis and fear, you're going to be extremely compromised. And you're going to be too tentative.
Yeah.
There's too much at stake.
Okay.
So you look at the clients we're working with now. They came to it as a leadership group by a genuine belief and passion around their creativity and their creativity's ability to not just be wrapped up into services and sold what we call on the floor, but actually to realize business problems, to create new value for clients, to innovate in the world, and often to make the world a better place. You know, there's a whole creativity can solve a lot of humanity's problems. Mm. We need creativity as our superpower. So I think that belief that we have had all the growth from the old service model, which is your point, which is, you know, wind back 15, 20 years, agencies used to run at a 20% net profit.
Mm.
Those days have gone. It's actually gone. You know, it's extremely unlikely that you're going to be able to do that now. So the starting point of not that we're failing or that we're declining, but the starting point of we've outgrown it.
Yeah, I like that.
It's
a better reframe.
Yeah. It puts the emphasis on the passion around creativity, the belief in innovation, the entrepreneurialism, the beauty and the magic of a creative business and our creative talent.
Mm.
So I think it's standing up straight.
Yeah.
Not hunching over. It's stand up straight in your creative power and your creative belief. You have simply outgrown a model that has been, you know, was the wrong model from the start. And you've probably had the best of it, which is great. And, you know, some of the ways of being able to sustain and even grow service businesses have gone.
Mm.
You know, agency of record, being able to fill your revenue hopper with five big clients every year that spend, you know, a lot of money, that market's gone.
Why?
Because clients have, because it's fragmented. They have so many choices. This notion of we're going to be the agency of record and we're going to provide the client with everything they want.
Mm.
Clients don't want to engage in that in that way anymore. So I think, you know, the old revenue model has gone. And also the new business model of we need to pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch has gone. So finding new client engagement models and new revenue models that don't rely on constant pitching is going to be really important. So I think that that's the first thing I'd say about our clients that are successful.
Okay.
They come at it with a creative stature that is really powerful. The second thing is they're always committed leaders. The singular thing around success and failure is the commitment of the leadership.
Okay.
To go on the journey and stay on the journey and always prioritize it and sort of rigorously keep working through it.
Mm.
They learn a new language along the way. They learn the language of value. And we work with them to retrain the systemization in their heads. So when you and I were getting our coffee a little bit earlier, I was talking to you about sort of being much more conscious of the we words.
Yeah.
You know, we do this, we do that. In a new positioning, it might start with the word we. You're literally holding up a mirror and looking at yourself in the mirror.
Mm.
The we words mean that you are attaching value to yourself. And that, I would say, Ollie, that's good for you. Good for you. But that, you know, that we're missing the point, and that is that our creativity exists in the hands of our clients, the buyers.
Mm.
It exists in their businesses and in their markets and in their audiences, their hopes and dreams. So one of the things that actually anyone listening to this now can start to practice is, could you get through a client meeting without saying the word we? It's a fun test, really difficult, because I've tried this with our clients many times. Can you remove all we words from your creds and your go-to-market materials? Can you start the language as, I call it, when the doing has been done? So when something has left your building, left your process, when you've built it, when it's out in the market, that is when you start creating the language around the utility value of what you're creating and the value that your clients will realize from it. So even swapping we to you, so you will have, you will realize, you can lead, you can transform, whatever it might be. But starting to practice creating a language of value which is your client's voice,
mm-hmm.
and has got nothing to do with your process and delivery.
That's going to be really hard.
It's really hard.
So, really hard. Well, I find this because we are on this journey at the moment with Unknown, right? 5 years, we were a, you know, punky feel creative recruitment company that did search, but also had the breadth and lens, a much bigger lens than a lot of our competitors. So we always, and I always said we had two audiences, right? We had the talent that was really important to empower, because that is our product, that's our creativity, or design, whatever you're selling as an agency. And then we also had the clients, right? The creative agencies, the brands, all the agencies that we work with. So landing the right tonality and selling what we do is really hard, because most of our competitors write to the clients. And I always think that's where you lose the energy and the spirit. So I think it's a really hard thing to do, because the agency game is very talent centric.
Yeah.
And they have to appeal to the talent. And so do we. So when we write, I have to be very careful, because sometimes it can disenfranchise the audience that I'm trying to gain the most amount of trust from, which is talent. So if I only ever wrote, our talent drives your growth, or, you know, talent strategies that end up with infinite possibilities, I'm making words up now, talent in that situation, which is one of our audiences, feels disenfranchised with our business. So it's really hard for us to get that right. And my question mark with agencies doing this, what will stop them from doing this? And I think if you're uncommon, if your major objective is to, yes, win more clients, but secondly, and quite importantly, bring the best talent to your agency and make them want to work for you, I think, and I don't know if this is a bad or a good thing, but a lot of the creative talent is obsessed about joining the next who's who of the industry. Mm. And because of the awards circuit, and because of the, oh, we do it in a different way, and if you come here, your work will be all around the world and you'll be famous. I think that's probably the biggest challenge agencies face when they position themselves.
Mm-hmm.
How do we...
attract the best talent
and deliver the most value to our clients. And I think the problem agencies get themselves into is getting that in one line.
With no we words.
Mm. And you mentioned the value triangle. Mm. And the value triangle is really interesting because I think every agency will change the proposition and none of the bottom two that you were talking about.
They're constantly repositioning.
I did that. You know, I fixed on this word, you know, talent that grows, da da da. Oh, that's not cool enough, you know. And I spent hours and hours thinking of the right line. I've asked every strategic consultant, copywriter that I know to come up with a line. And I stood there yesterday in front of my business and I said, guys, I've got the line. This time it was different because I spent, you know, 30 minutes thinking about that line this time around. But before, the whole presentation was about the line. Just like any creative agency, right? You go through this whole deck, all this, you know, contextual scene setting, and then, da-da, just do it, right? So I think it's a ramble, but I think this is the problem that we get caught in, is this love for simplistic, reductive positioning that ends up doing the opposite as to what you wanted it to do. So I guess my question to you is, how does an agency begin to do that? And what darlings do they have to kill in order to get to the point of value creation?
Oh, a lot in those questions. I think one of the first things is recognize that you're just talking about yourself.
Yeah.
And if you are talking about yourself and what happens under your roof, you are attaching value to your process and your services and your effort. So if you can think about that and recognize that. So for example, a classic agency positioning would be, we are a consultative, strategic, independent, used to be full service, data, creative technology,
integrated
global business.
Yeah.
And I just want to sort of, you know, go, good for you.
Yeah.
Great. Means nothing to me, but good for you. You know, that sort of like, how am I, and the kitchen sink. Mm. You can't miss a word because that might have...
They might by buying this. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to get everything in. I mean, it's just ludicrous, really, as a creative industry. We create positionings and a narrative around value and stories, which is all what happens under our roof.
Mm.
So I think it's really important to recognize, if you want to liberate creativity, take it outdoors.
What do you mean by that?
Take it outside. Well, if your creativity is trapped in a sort of narcissistic positioning, where you're literally mirroring yourselves, and you're using lots of we words, then you're attaching value to what you do, which is the doing.
Mm.
If you actually think about looking through your client's lens, then you can attach your creativity to business outcomes, business results, new markets conquered, new audiences engaged with.
Mm.
I mean, there are so many beautiful stories and case studies around the power and magic of creativity. When it is liberated from this sort of service culture, it goes out into the world and it creates real new meaning.
Yeah.
What your creativity can create outside is where your story and your positioning should be. I'll give you an example because it's so simple and obvious. But one of our clients, we always create three new front doors for our clients.
Three new front doors.
So rather than having a narrow engagement model, which is, you know, we're a data creative technology agency, or we're a independent global creative business, whatever it might be. The client engagement model is narrow. You've got a narrow doorway.
Mm.
And that doorway has often been built from comms and campaigns as well. And there is a doorbell on that doorway, and it literally says, give us a project, give us a brief. Because that's your engagement model. And then you've got all of these services that you're trying to justify for that project or brief. or utilize the talent. So if you rethink conceptually and visually, what if we gave ourselves permission and actually looked at the value we create for our clients and start to design new gateways into our business for our clients? Now, we call these gateways for growth, and it's such a powerful thing to do. So you might say, okay, in gateway number one, doorway number one, we might have a repackaged, optimized, new ceiling height comms business. So we might think, okay, door number one is for clients that need brand growth.
Mm.
And they are going to want to engage and access our skills and capability in a comms model as they understand it. But actually, when we're working in that area of our business, all of our higher value, what I call the back of the deck value. So, and this is a phenomenon in our industry. Often when we're presenting a deck to a client, we throw in at the end incredible innovation, business ideas. I mean, really mind-blowing creative innovation. And it's, I call it the back of the deck. It's the freebies. Give us a brief because, oh, by the way, look at all this other stuff we can do. So if you start to think about what other doorways and front doors could you create for your clients that where the answer is not comms and campaigns? Because if they all lead to the same conclusion, then they're not going to be authentic. So one doorway we've been working on with one of our clients is what we call an acute care doorway.
Acute care doorway.
It's just called an acute care doorway.
Okay.
It's a entryway for brands and advertisers into that agency, set up for scale and acute care. And you're probably thinking, that's interesting. What's acute care?
Yes.
Well, acute care is when the brand or the advertiser is in a, and the CMO, if it's a CMO, is in a position where the next 6 months really count.
Mm.
You know, there is a critical nature to how they get on top of what they need to get on top of. And it might be a pivot. It might be a disruption. It might be competitors being way ahead of them. It might be technology. It might be lack of investment. Their customers and consumers might have moved elsewhere. Mm-hmm. They're in a acute situation and they need a partner to walk in their shoes and help carry some of that for 6 months.
Mm.
So that is a front door and a gateway in for clients where they cannot work with agencies that are going to say 3 to 4 months of strategic services, we're going to do audits, we're going to do competitive mapping, we're going to take your data. And it's a sort of slow walk down the road with as many hours as possible. That acute care doorway acquires an operating system and a commercial model aligned to those clients' needs.
Mm.
And that means it has to be fast, transparent, sustainable, efficient. And you need to think very carefully about what you need to equip your clients with.
Mm.
So an acute care front door is a really valuable and relevant engagement area for clients. They can't get acute care in door one. It does not exist.
No.
There's slow care and there's waiting lists of 9 months.
Yeah.
You know, it's
because they come with a brief, right? It's gone ding dong, here's the brief.
Ding dong, here's the brief. And the agency's behavior and motivation at that point is, how long can we spin this out for?
Yeah.
Yeah, how long can we take? How many people can jump on that bus? The other door that I find really relevant for our industry at the moment is a door that takes marketing up to enterprise level.
Explain that.
So what that means is our fantastic creative talent in this industry gets quite constrained and restrained by always responding to a brief.
Yeah.
Because that brief will have tactics. It will have within it, we need one of these and we need one of those and we're going to do this. But if you have different doorways, you're giving yourself permission to be more commercially conscious.
Mm.
And what I mean by commercially conscious is to look at that brief, if it comes through, say, door one, and go, yeah, we could do that, but they're going to have to do it again in a year's time. It's not sustainable. It's another campaign or another piece of comms. And actually, if you look at the context that that brand is operating in, its market, if you look at the reality of what they are going to have to achieve to sustain themselves and even grow, then that investment is probably not going to be the smartest thing they could do.
No.
So taking, recognizing that our creativity needs to live and breathe beyond comms and campaigns is really important.
Okay, so that is, it's very good. And I can understand the value. We work with, our client list used to be heavily campaign and comms agencies, right? And as we've gone on and talent's come to us and said, I want to go higher up the food chain and become more strategic, we have then grown out our design agency, our strategic consultancies, our innovation consultancy clients, and then, you know, in-house app brand as well. So my question here is, how do you delay the gratification that I think we are all addicted to, which is answering the brief, getting the money in and extending it out? Is it a talent thing? Is it a relationship thing? Because you need to, in order, I think, to get to the enterprise level and understand the deep commercial, you know, problem, objective, challenge, you need to be speaking to the right person. And in a lot of these cases, the door that the clients walk through, there might be a brand manager, there might be somebody that isn't connected to the real commercial problem. Mm. So the question, I guess, is what is the route up the food chain to get into that conversation? Mm. Because I imagine they are a bit of a gatekeeper to that.
Yeah.
Is it talent or is it repositioning? Well, how do you do that?
I think it's belief. Because I think if everything comes from door one,
yeah,
then you're waiting for a brief to invite you to work on something that's more transformative or more enterprise level or more solving business problems.
Mm.
You're unlikely, if you're waiting for a brief to go upstream, you're going to be waiting for a long time. I think it's about, we need to be a lot less passive and be more creative in how we take our story to market.
Yes.
So the clients we work with, we encourage them and support them in becoming what I call the poster boys for post-transformation businesses. I want them to be famous in their sector and their industry. Mm. And it's all part of that transition from service to value.
Mm.
One of our fantastic clients, Wurz Group, who are based in Switzerland, are a year into a complete repackaging of their business into a product and program creative business. They are pure creative. They're not a tech business. They don't have platforms. We are repackaging creativity. And we've encouraged them to tell their story, their transformation journey in their press. I got an email this morning from the CEO saying, great news, we were in the papers recently talking about door two and door three, and two new clients approached us who really engaged with door two and three, and we've just sold, you know, the products they have created, in their words, are flying off the shelf, and they are starting work with those new clients at the end of November.
Wow.
So the... There are better ways to take your value to the market than waiting for either intermediaries to approach you or waiting for your clients to invite you to respond to a brief or to pitch.
Yeah.
We should be much more active in the market, talking about value and solving business challenges.
Mm.
Brands and advertisers have been asking for new commercial models from our industry for some time, and we tend to ignore it. Or we tend to use the pitch or the RFP as the time to trial a new model. But it goes back to that business model triangle. It's not authentic if you're doing it on the hoof, or if you're doing it in an acute situation like trying to win a pitch, because you're so compromised.
Yeah.
Because
it's easy to go with the path of least resistance.
Well, exactly.
Which is what you've always done.
Well, exactly.
Which is it's funny. This is where I feel, for the first time in our evolution as a business, that we all three triangles are connected. None of us want to be, you know, we've had 500 clients in 5 years. It's a lot, you know, to go through. And some of them have been amazing. Some of them haven't been great relationships for us. So we made it's not just a strategic positioning change. It's an emotional, behavioral acceptance.
Exactly.
We're not going to do it how we used to because it's hurting us.
Exactly.
It is like being in an abusive relationship in a way, because you're kind of like, you put up with it and you just get used to it, and that has such an implicit effect on the rest of the business. It took us a while to go, oh God, we've actually been encouraging you to do this and you haven't got any other options. Mm. And by the way, if we did and this was the option, would that be more favorable? Mm. Yes. Wow. But it's the three A's, isn't it? It's acceptance, acknowledgement, and then adaption or adaptability. I think it took us 5 years to get to the first two A's because of the loss, or the perceived loss, of our revenue. Maybe even we convinced ourselves that internally everyone wanted to carry on doing it that way and we'd lose them if we didn't carry on doing that. But it was only when we dove deeply into that situation and model and said, well, if we did it like this, would that make your life better? Mm. Yes. Fine. This isn't just a new client proposition. It's going to make the culture in our business way better. So I think it's hearing that story about it's really important, because I imagine that they would have gone through a similar journey themselves with those two A's if we're using
that.
So how do you get them to that position? I mean, you said to them they're coming to you with a stature of optimism and you know, they're accepting this thing. Do you ever go in and have to convince, are you called to convince people that this is the way forward? Does a CEO call you and go, I love what you do with, or what you did with Huge or Wurz, and I want you to come in and tell my company that that's the way forward? Do you ever find yourself in a convincing situation, or do you arrive at a company when they've all accepted that the change has to happen?
I try and make my clients work hard on that front. I think, yes, of course I'm going to be convincing. I've been doing this a long time. I believe we're really successful at what we do. But nothing speaks more than our clients talking about their journey. And we've been extremely lucky with the businesses we've worked with over the last few years, because they have really been generous flag bearers for transforming. And we've done a number of things in the industry where I've talked theory, and then sitting next to me on the sofa is the CEO, who then had to take that theory, realize it in their business, and operationalize it.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite, yes, I can, of course, I'm prepared to do some convincing, but I'm very wary of mindsets at the beginning.
Mm.
So if there is the best level of convincing starts with, I know we need to do this, we're committed to doing it, we have some, we have some questions around, how do you do this? What happens in existing clients? How do you productize creativity? How does procurement not,
say no,
reject?
Yeah.
So there are some very important questions.
Yeah.
But the mindset needs to be,
ready for change.
We're ready for change. We've outgrown this model. If we want to thrive, and then I think it's about my job is to give them certainty in the methodology we use.
Mm.
So we run a program playbook, And that program playbook, it's almost impossible for them to fall off it. Yeah, you have to transition them safely, inspire them on the journey, liberate creativity, and give them a new language. The process is the process. The process works. So the commitment of the leadership and their belief in their creative product is what will get them through it. And then the process takes care of the rest. But in terms of convincing people, the industry needs more success stories.
Yeah.
Productizing services does not work. That's productizing the all-you-can-eat buffet. The all-you-can-eat buffet is still there,
yeah,
but you've put some expensive products on it. I mean, you just have to think of it. Clients are going to reject it. It's like,
yeah,
you know, I've had that for free.
Why are you now charging me more for it? Yeah.
So productizing services, you know, and if you think you've got some products, are they products or are they processes?
Mm.
So a good test for people listening to this today is, if you're productizing a workshop, that's not a product, it's a process.
Okay.
It's an empty vessel. If you're productizing audits, they're processes. So that's not a product. If you're productizing a report, it's a delivery vehicle. A report. There's no value in a report. The report is just a delivery vehicle for the value.
So what's an example of a good product?
Well, a good product is the agency needs to recognize they may need to do some auditing, some workshops, some stakeholder interviews, some report writing. But all of that is process under their roof.
Yeah.
There's no value in that whatsoever. So you almost have to sort of wean yourself off that type of sort of paradigm thinking and say, what is the value when the doing's been done? We've done the audits, we've done the workshops, we've written the report, we've done the stakeholder interviews, we've done the competitor mapping, we've looked at all their data. Okay, we've done, the doing's done. What do we do? What value have we delivered? Mm. And that is the most important significant shift, which is to bring out your natural thought leadership, your natural IP around the way you can creatively solve your clients' business challenges and address some of the current sort of restrictions that your clients will be experiencing in their marketplaces in terms of how they grow and how they sustain their brands.
Okay, so would this... I'm trying to think of a neat way this would look. So like, I'm trying to think, are we designing a product around a client's objective? So would you call this the profit margin product? Or like, how do these products look? Or what's an example of one of these? Because I can understand that I like the doing when done thing, but how are you productizing that and how does it look? Kind of thing. That's what I need to know.
So, I mean, if you had a product that was, let's say, it's a Ignite Growth.
Ignite Growth. Okay, right. So we're talking about the objectives.
Yeah, Ignite Growth.
These are products that are focused around a client's objective.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm with you.
Face your truth.
Face your truth.
Face your truth would require a real...
Competitor analysis,
decoding, understanding the reality that's happening in the marketplace. There are a number of traditional services that an agency would go through for a brand to stand in its truth and confront its reality.
Wow! So we're all the way at the end of the product, right?
Yeah.
We are like at the almost what happens in the boardroom at Unilever or whatever client this is. You're imagining the CMOs turning around and going, I think we need to face our truth.
Yeah.
Or I think we need to, whatever it is, stand in our shoes and figure out who we are.
Yeah.
You're naming the product probably based on the first words that were uttered out by the person that's got the problem.
Yeah.
Not a CMO is never sitting in a room going, I think we need to appeal to 18 to 26 year olds with a creative campaign that, you know, X, Y, and Z services. Okay, I'm clearer now on that.
Yeah, the product starts with the outcome.
Okay.
In the hands of the clients. So, I mean, you might have a product around trapped value. It's a really, really easy way to think about a product.
Trapped value.
A trapped value, because the products have to, they have to deliver unidentified value.
Mm.
They can't be a way of taking back to the client what they already know. So each product has to be built to be able to deliver incremental, unknown, unrecognized value.
Okay.
That's really important. And it's not, once you apply that way of thinking, it's not that difficult. Mm. Because you might think of all the processes and services, but ultimately, what does the client have at the end? And if the client can stand in their truth or confront the brutal reality of their market with absolute lack of fear and complete integrity, that's really valuable to that client.
Mm.
So how do you equip the client with what they need? And how do you understand better what is the capability the client needs? And this is an interesting gap in our industry, which is it's like the Bermuda Triangle. it's really interesting. So when we talk to agencies about how they can create value for their clients, I will often ask the question, okay, you understand the business challenge. You believe that you have the capability and creativity to create significant value for your clients.
Mm.
For your clients to realize that value, what is the capability the client needs to have in their business?
Mm.
Because one of the commercially naive things that we do as an industry is we take ideas, great ideas, to our clients without any responsibility or
objectivity,
thank you, of how can that client realize that value.
Mm.
So we're not very good at seeing that operational readiness for clients is such a valuable area that we as the creative agency could take more care of.
Yeah. This is what I find really interesting, because my background was creative recruitment. Mm-hmm. So the amount of lunches, conversations, like I've probably spoken to over 10,000 creative directors in my life, right? Sat down, and I used to get so romantic and excited about these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only until I started running my own business that I've become madly aware of how irrelevant a great idea can be, and actually how
frustrating.
Yeah, it's a wonderful idea, love it, but it's completely inappropriate for what we need to do right now, and it's coming at the wrong time, it's nearly impossible to do,
we can't scale it.
It's a cute idea, it will be like a firework, it will be like a PR campaign, doof, everyone sees it, nothing, it doesn't do anything. So it's taken me a long time, particularly working with more strategic consultancies, design agencies that are, you know, building roots very deeply so the client can reach higher. They speak and sound and inquire in a totally different way, which I think is probably where the problem begins in agencies, creative agencies in particular. How are you going around your line of inquisition? How are you establishing the objectives of a company before offering the solution? We had a CMO recently in to speak to our group called Good CEOs. And one of the things that he said was, stop providing us answers to questions you've not asked.
Yes, yes.
You're giving us solutions to problems that you don't understand.
Yes.
And I think that's the addiction.
I'm so glad you've touched upon this. This notion that we're here to deliver creative ideas and that creative ideas is enough and we should be paid and patted on the back for creative ideas is commercially naive.
Yes.
And I think that's, you know, again, everyone listening to this, I am on a mission to marry creativity with commerciality. We call it commercial creativity. And one of the things that I would say is, if you look at the definition of commercial, the actual definition of the word commercial, it's how you create value.
Yeah.
Commercial is creativity, and we've lost it. we almost have put creative there and commercial over here, and that commercial is almost the enemy of creativity. Commercial is a creative state. It's a creative skill. It's how you create value. Commercial is how you tell the story, how you package, how you take care of your client's ability to properly operationalize and realize your creativity in market. So I think in terms of what does the creative industry need to thrive in the future, it needs to start embracing commercial as part of its creative capability set and skill set. So commercial creativity is the future. If we have creative without commercial, it's not a superpower. It's I'd call it lobbing creative ideas over the fence. Because you're blind in terms of what happens over the other side of the fence. If you are throwing creative ideas over a fence, then you are really not helping your clients, and you're not being responsible partners, certainly not responsible investment partners. So the creative idea has to be part of a commercial responsibility. And that doesn't but that is a create that it's the creatives I'm talking to, not finance. It's a muscle that the creatives have that they don't, they've stopped using. It's a creative talent.
I agree. There's a Alan Watts animation that I'm going to send you after this called Prickles and Goo. It's basically describing left and right brain people, or people that identify as prickles, normally people that are in finance, and then goo are the creative people, right? And he goes, it's a beautiful 2-minute animation where he speaks about, you know, these people know the words, but they don't understand the music, and these guys know the music, not the words. And it's lovely, and it's kind of going on about how these two will never get along, and then you suddenly see the thing get squished together, and you realize that everyone is both. And I think we've tried to disassociate the two. And I spoke to Nick Law recently over at Accenture Song, and supremely intelligent human being, where his task as creative chairman of Accenture Song is to figure out how we get Prickles and Goo to speak to each other. And the funny thing is, it is that knowing that both people actually deep down have either side of them in them, they've just not been empowered to believe that. And they've also not been empowered that one enables the other. Commerciality enables better creativity, and creativity always benefits commerciality. So
they're the same.
You're marrying them together. And I think that's really important. It's funny. I think I'd love to see more people in finance give a 2-year tenure at a creative agency and vice versa, because you'd suddenly have more empathy and understanding of what each other are trying to achieve. So I think that's a really, it's a really neat way of positioning what you do. I'm wary of our time, so I want to make sure this is a value to you as well. But also, I want to make sure that this is objective. I think sometimes when we can do these podcasts, you can spend time in theory and not enough time in practice. And we can. I don't want someone leaving this podcast running an agency going fuck. So I want them to leave this going fuck. You know, I could do something here. So if you were speaking to a room full of creative agency owners, or they're in a C-suite position or whatever they're doing, they could have just joined a creative agency. What would the three first steps or advice would you give to them as they go on to prove value to their clients and value to their own businesses?
I would say believe in your creativity.
Okay.
I think you have to have absolute passion and belief in creativity as ability to change lives, solve problems, make the world better. And I think we've lost a bit of that. Actually. So I think the first thing is stand in your power again. The second thing is commit to change. Change is scary, no question, but not changing is terrifying. So pick where you want to stand. And I think that's also really important. And then the third thing is enjoy the journey. if we enjoy the journey, we're going to be great at it, and we're going to take everyone with us, and clients will feel it, and your people will feel it. So I think you know, any change program, any cultural transformation program, which is what it really is, that's out, we call it business model change. That's a terrible label. It's actual, everything that we've talked about in this conversation today is cultural transformation.
Yeah.
And if you approach that with an open mind, energy, and creativity, you will absolutely blast it out of the park.
Yeah, that's really good advice.
If it's painful and tedious and perceived as, you know, something that finance should be doing, then you're not gonna really enjoy it or support it or sustain it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you believe in your product. Recognize that change is inevitable, so you might as well be on that change journey, because there is nothing if you're not changing. And third, really enjoy the process. Let the process inspire you, liberate you, energize you, and you will be phenomenally successful if you can bring those three mindsets to it. That's really what matters at the heart of it, I think.
Owning the change. And then the fourth is, of course, to give Caroline Johnson a call. If you can't get there yourself, she's right here. Caroline, I want to say thank you so much for joining me.
Such a pleasure.
You've been amazing. Awesome.
It's such a pleasure.